Welcome, everybody, to Silver Shield Report. Today I have Marvin Motzenbacher, who's, I guess he's now back on for the fourth or fifth time. I really resonate with him. He's our sort of mad scientist, patent lawyer, innovative thinker, and I just really, every time I kind of get stuck, it's good to bounce ideas off of him. And Marvin, for those that you don't know, is probably one of the most active members in the Pennsylvania Silver Shield group that was trying to get together to build a, you know, sort of a bug out community and stuff like that. And my role in that was, and I told Marvin this, I said, Marvin, you know, I trust your intellect and your value judgment and stuff like that. And, you know, if you find a property with the right people, just let me know and I'm in, you know, just without even thinking about it. And so Marvin actually did an incredible amount of work, really getting to know a lot of people where I just simply obviously did not have the time to do that. Marvin actually did take the time to work with people, to meet with people. I know he drove up there many times, viewed a lot of properties, and really spent a lot of time getting to know the people, but more importantly, to figure out what the problems were and why things didn't come out of it. And a couple just general observations that I had. Number one, the main overall theme why I think this is nothing really came of it is that the idea that we only have one shot at this paradigm shift, and you know there's still counterparty risk, obviously with any group, but you know, even in this group. Number two, I think the idea that you know, silver being tremendously undervalued, I think that we would have seen a lot more action if silver, you know, broke 50 and, you know, everybody had a lot more, you know, fiat cash to spend and maybe, you know, unload a couple thousand ounces to go ahead and do something. But since it has been you know, sitting at you know, these levels, it's, you know, it's kind of hard to unload it at lows, or what we think are lows. You know, then it came down to the idea that there was some people who have capital and ideas, and then there was other people who didn't have capital but had ideas, and then there were some that didn't have ideas or capital but was willing to work. So it was interesting to see the combination of that. So I brought Marvin in here, number one, you know, put down what we were attempting to do, but more as a lesson on what we can do in the future to do this and provide solutions, because this is everything that we do. Anybody can describe a problem, but what is the solution? And I think that based off of a couple emails that we shared back and forth and my experience down with the guys at AOCS, that we are on the verge of an answer. So, Marvin, glad to have you back. How you been?
Fine, thanks. I've been back and forth to Japan and had some, as I mentioned a little while ago, extremely good experience there, which raised my consciousness a little bit about what we're doing. It seems to me what we're looking for has been around for thousands of years. We're not trying to do anything special. Mm-hmm. But the real challenge is our own consciousness. Yeah. It's not necessarily something outside of us. And confronting that is kind of what's happened in the Pennsylvania community, where we're forced to look at ourselves and are we really ready to do this, that, and the other thing. And by the way, Marla, the medical doctor, has done a lot more work than I have in terms of looking and going through things. She's actually succeeded in getting a place.
Yeah, I know she spent a good deal amount of money, and people don't quite realize the amount of mileage and gas and hotels and, you know, talking to this and part of it. So I, you know, good on her for actually doing that. I actually did a strategy session with her probably about a year and a half ago about her situation. And when the opportunity came up, she kind of really jumped all over this to take action. And I know that she has gone ahead. I don't know. I think she partnered with somebody else in our group. But you know, that's for her and that's part of her thing. But you're right. The more that we do this, you know, I started off with, you know, educating people and bringing out the awareness, but at the end of the day, all of this has got to do with consciousness. And, you know, it is, a bit, even for me, to kind of really get out, to kind of give you a very, childish, small example. I've had this obscenely large Star Wars collection that I have accumulated for 30 years. And, you know, I probably have 600 figures. I mean, it's, you know, I get men and your kids come downstairs and go, oh my God, look at all this. When I got back from Texas, I went downstairs without even a thought, and I started packing it all up, and I'm going to end up selling it. And to me, the symbolism in my mind of that collection was not necessarily childhood memories, because the majority of it I bought, you know, much later, just to kind of fill out the collection. But it was like my consciousness was of that, is that this is consumerism, this is collecting things to fill a void. And that by me getting rid of this, it was it's a very cathartic way, and in a way of changing my consciousness. And, you know, I think at the end of the day, I really just want to get rid of everything. Like, I want to live a very peaceful, empty life, and find it more fulfilling. And it's not that I want to live monastically. I want to have more real relationships and stuff like that. In my trip down to Texas, I told the guys down there, I said, this is the first time that since I was in the Marine Corps that I actually felt a sense of community, a sense of purpose, a relaxed sense of sharing and caring and understanding. And like Marvin said earlier, we're not trying to create something new. It's really to get back to something that has been beaten out of us, and that, you know, we can have a community of like-minded individuals who will, you know, share the same values, who kind of have the same things, and that we can actually help bring out the best in everybody. Is that what you're trying to get to, Marvin?
Yeah, you mentioned the community. The community that I'm joining in Japan, I was just, while listening to you talk, I brought my business partner to my incipient community over there, and he was amazed because every person we met, we stopped and talked to.
Yes.
Whether they're, some of these people were like 80 years old, yep. Some were fishing on the side of the road, some were neighbors. That's the kind of community where, like it or not, they're going to pay attention to your welfare, and yep. You're going to pay attention to theirs.
Yep. And that's the wonderful thing. Like, you think of all the modern constructs of quote-unquote safety. Rob was talking about creating a bank that does not have FDIC insurance, and if you do create a bank with FDIC insurance, you know, you need like $10 million and this and approvals and all that other stuff. And Rob asked, what if we don't want FDIC insurance? And the guy goes, well, why would you want to do that? You would fail. And he said, let me take care of that. And he said, well, if you don't, you don't need all these approvals and you don't need all this capital, but you'll never find clients. He said, I'll find the clients. So it's that false sense of security versus the
reality.
That's
a characteristic of the small community, because I ran into that building a house. Mm-hmm. You can – and by the way, what you just described, I mean, I'm happy to invest money in a bank if I have a legal contract with mm-hmm. them mm-hmm. that has some wealth stuck to it.
Yeah.
Same difference.
Everybody's got a skin in the game. Well, and this is what I kind of got out of what's going on down there. Now, I'm not partners with them. I have a deal with them where, I'll provide the marketing and the designs and stuff, and I'll get a cut of the action. I'm not, married to them. But I think that there is going to be a case or a need or an ability for us to actually go ahead and actually, either invest in a bank or a depository or something along those lines where, we can actually take our silver and use that as collateral for forming this bank, and that the mint could actually, monetize it when need be or stuff like that. But I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, and I haven't even talked to Rob about this. But to me, that's the kind of solves two of the problems where, you know, we're all so invested in silver. We all get that it's undervalued, but, you know, there's opportunities to go ahead and do something. I want to get back to what were your overall dynamics like? You,
yeah. We're looking for a bug out place. We had a meeting in Pennsylvania. Remember that the meeting where you came?
Yes, yes.
And everyone's excited. Mm-hmm. We passed around a hat, collected money mm-hmm. to pay to get a LLC started.
Yes, yes.
And by the way, I'm returning that money. Whoever gave me some.
Okay.
Passions were running high. We're all optimistic. And what happened is that it seemed to me everyone was feeling a collective. There is a collective. Mm-hmm. It's like the mother. Everyone wants mother to take care of them.
Yeah.
And the fact that somebody's doing something, there's this land here for you to put your to park your trailer in or whatever it is that you're thinking of. It's kind of like a collective feeling that I think got us all tripped up. And who's providing it? There's no government, you know, there's no one pulling strings to corral our emotions like the, you know, like normal situation.
Yeah, like I kind of got the feeling like, you know, obviously I'm the kind of the center figure of all this, but I've said over and over again, I'm not going to be, you know, some leader. I'm not going to be your George Washington. I'm not going to be the one to say, okay, here, you know, here's where I'm going to be. And, you know, I'm sure I could get 50 people to join me on anything that I wanted to do. But
if you have money, put it in and start it by the land and then say, here's the land. Here's, I've already spent my money.
Yeah.
I'll sublet to you or whatever, however you want to do it. It's interesting. The next step was a realization that.
Well, hold on. So when, I mean, I made it obvious that, you know, I'm not going to do that. So that really left it up to the group to decide what they were going to do. And I wanted people to do it on an individual level with people that they were comfortable with and develop the relationship. So what dynamics did you see in there? Like I stepped out, there's this collective there and there's like 30 or 40 people. I mean, it was a decent size. I would have thought for sure like 8 people got together and would have done something.
Well, people have gotten together. I know of a group of, I think, 4 people that secretly got together. And by the way, you're welcome to join them, as I said before.
Hey, I have offers all over the place. So
but everyone's doing their own thing close to home now. Everyone looked at the practicality of quitting their job and or traveling to West Virginia, you know, 4 hours, 5 hours
down
one way,
and
realizing how much the gasoline and time costs. Mm-hmm. And so they realize they're going to stay close to home.
Yeah, so here's a dynamic, and it's true. I mean, even with me, you know, on some level, like when I moved from New Jersey to Ohio, I'm good where I am. I mean, you know, I can technically move anywhere in the world and do what I'm doing. I mean, just as long as I have, you know, good internet connection. But the reality is that you need to be by a social network that you have some level of trust with, whether that's friends and family and stuff like that. You need to have the ability of being able to provide yourself before the collapse, and, you know, who knows when it's going to happen. But it's not like everybody can just, you know, up and leave and quit and go chop wood for a living, or even if that's something desirable. And then the other factor thrown in the wrench is the drive. Say you do get a place that's, you know, 5 or 6, 7, 8 hours away, you know, how much time realistically are you going to be able to spend going there, traveling there, stocking it? And then, you know, if you do set it up and you're gone for months at a time, then obviously you're leaving yourself open there. So, you know, I was kind of hoping that we would find something and then one of the younger guys would kind of be the, you know, the head of the...
Yeah, I have a few comments on that. And one, I think the Pennsylvania group generally did succeed. There are small people became close friends with those around them and are pursuing their bug out. And the fact that we don't know about the specifics is probably a good thing.
Yeah, exactly. Which also goes into, Marvin, you know, the overall theory, and before this group I even floated this idea, my overall theory is for all of us to remain decentralized and, you know, kind of, you know, prep on our best. And then after the anger phase, after it's obvious what the dangers are and, you know, that we get what the playing field is, then I think there will be opportunities. Not only because the dangers will be known instead of this, you know, unknown, but then we also will see what kind of strengths we have and how weak, you know, the quote-unquote opposition is, and that's usually the best time to go ahead and try doing things. Is that something that you saw too, or?
Yeah, I did, but I think I saw a big problem where people get it about the elite and get it about, you know, becoming aware, but really are not committed to the change in consciousness. And I was extremely frustrated and upset constantly.
You shouldn't be, you know, because
I'm thinking, for example, I was in West Virginia a couple of days, and everywhere I went, I asked questions of the locals. Mm-hmm. Does anyone mind how I build my house? Does anyone mind about my toilet, my septic?
Yeah.
Every local said, no,
you cross-eyed.
Cares at all.
Yeah.
You know, and some of these counties had a population of like 3,000 or 4,000 people in them, right?
Yeah.
A county.
Yeah, a county.
And there'd be like one police guy,
yeah,
you know, the county, maybe two.
Yeah.
And nobody cared. But when we discussed it as a group, for example, one guy whose job in the present paradigm is making septic tanks,
yeah,
you know, in writing on the record for
yeah
everyone to see,
yeah,
is admonishing me that, well, we're going to break the law if we don't tell the county what we're doing,
yeah,
and all
yeah
these
yeah
and ask them
yeah
permission.
Yeah.
And like, oh, my God, you know, this like you said, you know, these small communities where people look out for each other, that's the opposite thinking. That's
oh, absolutely. And
I'm with us, and I just getting really upset with that.
Oh, yeah, and I guess the guys that kind of fear this system or, you know, breaking the laws, I don't think are going to be the ones that, you know, end up, you know, either fully being successful in the next paradigm or they're going to end up hurting themselves. I mean, you really have to start thinking more like a free market doer or, you know, like a pirate, you know, something of that
yeah
magnitude where it's like, you know, and I'm going to talk about this in another thing. When the anger phase happens, I think that we're going to literally have to be privateers, pirates, cowboys, mavericks, you know, really these kind of heroic figures that do take action when the rest of the world is really, you know, on fire. And I use these two examples, and it's ironic because two of the characters I've resonated the most in movies were Rhett Butler and Han Solo in Star Wars. And if you think about it, when the war was going on, what were they doing? They weren't fighting on either side. They saw that both sides had the thing. They were out for themselves, and they were pirates and blockade runners and stuff like that. And Rhett Butler had gold when
they're going after the wealth.
Yeah.
And that brings me to the main point that I've been trying to figure out what lesson these difficulties provided me.
Mm-hmm.
The lesson to me is the following. Okay, you wake everyone up. That's the first stage. But we're walking away, right?
Yes.
What is walking? We're doing more than just walking physically with our feet away.
Ourselves.
We're walking towards something.
Mm-hmm.
We're changing our consciousness and focusing on wealth production.
Mm-hmm.
I think, for me personally, you know, all these interactions we've been having, consuming the most important resource of all, our time.
Yeah.
You could spend, you know, your entire life monitoring and reading websites about gold and silver and
yeah, yeah,
and what the elite are doing, and that's
time
very
suck
bad. That's
it.
Very bad.
Yeah.
And instead, I think we need to the correct consciousness is to value our time according to wealth production. Does this conversation, this activity create wealth, or does it not? Does this guy create wealth, or is he just spouting forth another idea that he read on the internet?
Yeah.
The paradigm is characterized by information age where ideas are not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
They're not a big deal, just like when we went through the industrial age where our big muscles no longer made us better.
Anything, yeah.
Our clever brains are no longer make us better because we can get clever thoughts on the internet for no cost except
yeah
a little time.
Yeah.
So let's move beyond the ideas and focus on reality, the reality of wealth creation. And in that regard, we should focus on our own skills. I like to see the SR group be a clearinghouse for those who want to get education from others and work together to develop our wealth production ability.
Yeah, and that's what I guess. I mean, I've been stumbling along with this. Like, I'm not some all-knowing guru, and I have this overall idea of where, you know, this is all going to go. And I like the idea that we went out and impacted the awareness. I like the idea that we have a group that benefits off of what we're doing, but we're actually starting to form a group that can, you know, is intellectually aligned to like I actually like it when people actually cancel far more than join, because I think the easiest thing to do is kind of join whenever I have an opportunity to join the group and stuff like that. It's easy for people to come in, you know, look and listen, whether they get value out of it or not. But I actually like when people, you know, say, hey, you know, I'm not getting anything out of this, or, you know, I don't like it, because I'd much rather have a group of 50 people who are like, I get you, dude. I get where this is going. You know, this is the best use of my time right now, and that we'll end up doing something better. And I feel like we're getting more and more concentrated as time goes on, because I feel like when we're in the denial stage, there's too many factors going forward with counterparty risk and all this other stuff to actively go ahead and build a community. I mean, I think one thing I'm not into doing is to say, hey, you know, let's go plant our foot in Utah and, you know, we're the, you know, rah-rah heroes. I'd much rather stay decentralized. That being said, there's nothing to say that we can't remain decentralized and maybe partner and start building, you know, wealth-producing activities. And that's why, like, Marvin, like, I know, I've met so many of these people. We have a freaking superhero team of just intuitive problem solvers and wide-awake individuals, and it's like, you know, just my example, I've only known the guys down at American Currency Standard for two months, and we've already been in front of Congress, the hit of the Silver Summit, we've already launched this coin, and it's like, that's something that can be successful in this paradigm. But Marvin, think of what that can be in the next paradigm as a means of, well, you know, when everybody else, maybe the mints are shut down, maybe the, you know, the silver supply is shut down, we'll have the ability and the kind of branding to be able to create real wealth and mint wealth. But also think about, like, you know, so much of what I think is going to happen in the anger phase, whether you look at the collapse of Russia, where there was a massive amount of assets for sale because there was no markets, there was no currency, there was massive counterparty risk, there'll be an opportunity to monetize that wealth. But I think the biggest money is going to be made in logistics. What's the biggest problem with logistics? Well, you need to have a system of payment that can be trusted. And you also need the ability of moving that with communications and actual freight. And now we have this, you know, kind of partnership with Pete Mistralis of Airstream Jets. So now we have, we have some sort of, you know, banking type system with the mint and stuff like that. We have Pete with the logistics and stuff like that. Like, what other pieces could we start fitting together that we could say, hey, when this happens, you know, we'll be able to kind of start moving right away. And go ahead.
That prompts an observation. First of all, I won't speak not also on behalf of a few others that I've spoken to. We're waiting for you to get that bank started. That's a big deal. Secondly, I'd like to see the SSR group as an education exchange on the framework provided by Ivan Ilvich, Ilvich, who provided an idea for a new paradigm education where real skills can be developed for almost no cost.
Yeah.
I think
that's what a resonating community would do. I mean,
and then, you know, communication being the other thing.
That's kind of that tricky thing, you know, the communication, because, you know, short of ham radio, I can't really think of another, you know, something that
ham radio is low bandwidth is a problem with that.
Oh, what's the?
I mean, you can't get much information transmitted quickly that way. You could do audio, you could do voice, I mean, you could have conversations, but that's rather public too.
Yeah. I don't know of any really secretive way other than, you know, physically moving and being with people. And that's,
well, there are absolute encryption methods. I'll give you an example. You could take a random number generator and generate a random number, fill a book with it, a DVD with it, and share copies of that DVD. Until that DVD runs out, you can have lookup tables that are absolute. But again, that's not really high bandwidth.
Yeah, I don't even want to like take my time to worry about it. Like, everybody's like, oh, your emails are being watched. I'm sure they are. This conversation is being listened to. I'm sure they are. My point, I'm not doing anything illegal. And the best part about it is, Nothing can be construed of anything that I'm doing would turn into, you know, violence or physically even attacking or even confronting this paradigm. You know, I'm the biggest proponent of walking away. And the main thrust of all my arguments is about consciousness. And I don't think that those people who, are opposed to us or against us get their own consciousness, much less the opposite consciousness, much less understanding the whole battle that's really going on here. It's not about money or military or political or media power. It's about what are we actively or passively supporting. And I've always thought, like, anybody actually listening to this, monitoring it, would have to say at some point, you know, shit, what am I doing here? Like, you know, you almost have to say, you know, here I am monitoring this guy. He's obviously not a threat. And, you know, start to question your own life and what you're doing. And, you know, I know I've had an impact on a lot of military contractors. We just had an Alaska State Trooper walk away from his 20-year career, took an early retirement because he could no longer look at himself in the mirror with his uniform on and pretend that what he was doing was good for people. So
I do think that each one of us, especially myself, needs to focus more on a new consciousness of the priority of creating wealth and less of wasting time on the mass of super over information we're inundated with. We're drowning in information. We don't realize it.
Yeah,
this is a characteristic of the new paradigm, in my opinion.
Well, and that's kind of the thing. Like, people are sending me like DVD movies and articles and stuff like that. Like this $43 trillion bankster thing and all this stuff.
And I'm like, what makes a difference to our particular future? I mean, maybe I know everything in the world, but I can't do squat.
Yeah.
It's a waste of my time and brain cells. Yeah. Those brain cells should be dedicated to permaculture, to energy. Mm-hmm. We need to focus on wealth production. And one thing I learned with the Pennsylvania Group, there are many individuals who don't have the skills. You mentioned that before in one of your earlier talks. We don't have these skills, many of us. All of us don't in some ways, but and we need to get them.
Yeah.
And I think the SSR could be.
I'm kind of bandying this around. It's like, what's the exact process of moving this along? And like in my mind, you know, when I did the whole silver bullet, silver shield thing, it all came down to this bank. Okay.
That's great. We want to hear more about that.
I know, but it's like
to hear from you. A bank, we want to put some silver, gold, whatever in it.
And honestly, before I talked to Rob this past week, my mind was, well, I know it takes $10 million to start a bank at the very least. Partners and my father, or my partners, started a bank in 2007. They put in, I don't know if I said this story out loud, but my father's partners, father and son, they were in business since 1987, got together with 20 other, you know, baby boomer, millionaire, their shit don't stink, they're high in the hog, they're thinking themselves as the next, oligarchs, and they're at this fancy dinner that one of the guys' restaurants that they owned, and they had an investor meeting, and it was just the 20... three of us, because 21 started, and it was my father and I that didn't join. And, they gave the presentation about how it was like the opposite of the Sons of Liberty Academy, where I say, this is how fractional reserve banking works. This is why it's fraudulent. This is why it's bad. They're like, this is how fractional reserve banking works, and we could be billionaires. Like, you know, we can make money on deposits. We can eventually build up the equity and sell to a larger bank. And go, you know, like, it was like the opposite of what I was doing. And the son of the partner, which was closer to my age, came up to me and said, so what do you think? I said, well, I wish you guys a lot of luck. He goes, what do you mean? I said, I was honest. I said, number one, I don't have that kind of money. Number two, I would not invest in that. I said, we're at the end of a credit cycle. All these assets that you would be loaning against are going to be drastically reduced. The reserve ratio that you guys have to hold, you really can't compete with the bigger guys out there. That's why they're constantly sucking all this up. I said, what's the majority of the wealth, the loans going to be on property? We're past the peak of the housing bubble, and that anything you guys invest in, you're going to start taking washes on. And then all your guys' businesses are tied to this. So, we got the car dealers, we got the advertising guys, we got all these guys who are making a ton of money now, and that was going to end up hurting. So, that was right then was a big split from me and him, and I was like, we're done. And then it was my father and my mother, and eventually, leaving the whole situation a year later. And that's what they did. And it's funny that I think you go on Bankrate.com, and because they're FDIC insured, they have to publish their financial statements. And their net equity position 5 years later, they lost 66% of their equity. And you know damn well as I do, if they were really honest about their bookkeeping, they would have been wiped out a long time ago. But that being said, the opposite consciousness bank is Silver Bullion. And when Rob says that we don't need the FDIC insurance and that we could actually do something, this is now maybe an opportunity where we can say, hey, you guys all have silver. We know it's undervalued, but let's use that as equity in a bank and somehow do like what Lakota did, where there is no dollars in the Lakota Bank at all. In or out, there's no dollars. It's silver. They pay interest on silver. They can do long-term, short-term demand notes and stuff like that. And then with this Mulligan Mint starting up that Rob did, if there is an opportunity or is a need to cash, the Mulligan Mint can borrow against the silver that's sitting in this new bank and monetize it as need be, and then pay it back with the proceeds of that and pay it back. So, I have to talk more with Rob and understand that, but I think that could be something. And let's just put a pin mark there and say, okay, say we got that figured out. The next thing is, what do we do if we can capitalize on that? What do we do with that money? And to me, it's not about building energy and food production right now, because we still have that counterparty risk. We don't know what parts of the country are going to be good, or, I drove through Dallas and it was like, I've always thought of Texas as this kind of, free spirit, Republican stuff. And I tell you what, man, I think Texas is going to be that first fascist state, because they love their George Bush and they love their Lyndon B. Johnson. And, it seemed that mentality that there was definitely a little bit more,
world government,
not world government, but fascism, man. Like you give them a flag and a cross and they're going to go, go waste somebody. Maybe I was overlooking some of that stuff, and it's maybe that's just Dallas and not the rest of Texas, but it was certainly a much more freewheeling environment down there, which I really resonated with. But we don't know where that's going to happen. So then I'm thinking, well, if we get the bank set up, the anger phase happens. Well, that's a way of diversifying our wealth so that we can have some of it in another area that maybe have access to. Rob's got this idea with this card system where, we can actually use like a credit card system to access our silver, where I think the process goes where, right now, let's just use Lakota, but this could be a new bank or whatever. Say you got money in Lakota and you want to use your card. Well, you swipe your card and the payment comes through, and say it's $100. The process is, I think, 3 ounces of Lakota silver are then sold or delivered to the Mulligan Mint. The Mulligan Mint actually buys that silver and transfers the money to the card. And then the Mulligan Mint's obviously going to monetize that by selling the physical silver rounds. So that way, the Lakota Bank never is receiving dollars at all. They're strictly dealing with silver, and I really like that idea. Like, if we had a way of dollars in one thing, but keeping our silver totally separate, I like that too.
That sounds good if we have contractual.
Yeah,
well,
yeah,
if
I wouldn't.
If we're all members,
yeah.
True members, that we have ownership and can see the books at all the time.
Yeah.
No, can see everything that's going on. I think a lot of us could put into that.
Yeah, no, I do too. And you know, it's not something that I would, you know, obviously put all of my silver in or all my money, but it's definitely, I think,
yeah,
that seed that we can plant now that would have huge returns later. So when I studied the collapse of the Soviet Union,
yeah,
I looked at all the oligarchs, the Russian oligarchs, how they got money, and the official line is that they all started banks. Every single one of them had their own bank.
Sure.
And they said, you know, that they went out and they were making obscene amount of profits in monetary exchange. So, like, they, you know, they would have people coming in, getting rid of rubles, and they would make a ton of profits on the dollars to ruble, Deutschmark to ruble spreads, and that they then use that money to go buy up all these assets. The real story, I think, is that the Rothschilds created all those banks for those oligarchs and supplied them with capital whenever they needed it, and that I highly doubt that they were actually doing a lot of exchanging of currency and stuff like that. These guys don't come across as guys that would be on the, you know, tellers trading money and stuff like that. But
what are you doing for alternative competing side by side competing currency development? Isn't the SSR developing its own currency or ideas for neighborhood currencies?
Right now it's silver because I still think it is the most undervalued. But I think after the paradigm, it's silver, it's gold, it's copper, it's nickel. It could be debt free community currency. You know, they can have time based currencies. Like I would want whatever we do not to have any legal tender laws. Like, if people want to store their wealth in hay, that's fine. And the principle is the same. Essentially, commodity banking is saying, you know, it's easy for us to kind of visualize silver, okay? You know, silver's money, it has value and stuff like that. But the reality is, why can't you monetize wood or oil or farmland or even the buildings of the community, and be able to use that as some sort of denomination? Like, say we bought a park, you know, a state park.
Yeah, kilowatt hours has been done.
Yeah,
yeah.
Energy money. I mean, the point is, and anybody would be able to set that up in our paradigm. But the reality is right now, I wouldn't want to start working on an energy-backed currency when we can't even trust where we actually plant, you know, our power plant. Or know where that is, but maybe that's something we can use. So.
Yeah, that thought was prompted by your statement, because I don't see any return on investment.
Yeah.
Right now.
Yeah.
If you had a bank, would you expect to get any return on anything with the way things are going?
I think if I would imagine that if we do set up a Lakota type bank, that we would obviously demand a return of silver or part of the profits if they end up using some of that silver. But I think I would be kind of interested in, and I don't know if this is starting to get a little bit against what I'm for, but I've always been wanting to borrow against my silver when we're at like $26 silver. Like, this
yeah.
whole past year, I would have put up thousands of ounces to double down at $26 silver. Even now, I mean, I don't know where we are, like 30 or whatever. But the problem is, when we're all in silver, we have no liquidity to really take advantage of other times to buy. So, you know, would it be possible to have set up this Lakota type bank and say, I would like to borrow against the silver and create a demand note? And if we can have this non-FDIC bank, why can't that non-FDIC bank that we own say, okay, Chris, you have 5,000 ounces of silver. That's valued at $150,000, okay? And we're going to loan you.
Yeah.
We're going to create a demand note out of thin air, just like the banks do. and have a contract where you have to pay that back over a certain amount of time, a certain amount of ratio, and we'll give you, say, 80% of the value of that. And maybe we even say, hey, because we're all silver investors, we expect you to buy silver with that. So let's kind of play the math here. I say 5,000 ounces I want out. The reality is I get essentially 4,000 ounces of silver back at $30 an ounce. So if silver drops, I would the bank's holding both the 5,000 and the new 4,000, and they have a demand note against that 5,000. So if the price goes up, then I can pay back the bank at whatever it is. And if it doesn't, then the bank is always secured because they have the original 5,000. That goes to the group. And I'm out on my bet. And then you start to think, well, shit, you know, how much more silver can we get in?
I'm pretty sure you can do that if
no one does it, though, right?
If there's no secrecy and it's in black and white writing, perhaps, that you understand the risk, I don't see any problem with that.
And then you start to think, well, then if that's the case, I mean, we can do that multiple times. You know, we might be able to get more silver into the bank, knowing that that's going to be the backbone for something bigger later.
You have gamesmanship where just when the shit hits the fan, silver drops, you know, in half for a few days, and then some wise guy tries to call you on it.
Well, this is where the wise guy is. We're both sides of that trade.
Well,
the individual guy, and then the bank would be us. You know, why can't we?
You have some security that way. I mean, you have some guarantee.
Bank does.
That's good.
Yeah, the bank does. You know, the individual.
Now, you could put that in writing, by the way. I mean, anything could be put in a contract.
Think about like what we do with our houses. Like, we all get mortgages, right?
Yeah.
The bank, you know, signs a note against the house, and that you have to pay it back over a certain amount of time plus interest. Metal. How many millions of cars have loans against them, and yet I can't get a loan against an appreciating asset like silver? Like, cars drop 30% as soon as you drive off the lot, and banks are comfortable with that risk, knowing that it's a secured thing. Well, to me, if the bank has the silver in their house, there's absolutely no risk. Like, if it goes down to, you know, $15, and the guy can't make his monthly payment to fulfill that contract, and he defaults, well, then the bank just picked up 5,000 ounces.
Well, the big problem might be when the elite change the laws, they decide to extinguish the dollar, replace it with something else, and have a law that covers existing ongoing contracts in their favor.
And again, we're on both sides of that, so.
Well, if the elite decide that, or the government, I think there's going to be confiscation of silver and gold myself. That's why I'm exporting it, but I don't know. I see risk, but you're taking the risk. I see no problem with you doing that. There's a contract. Everyone understands. There's no secrecy, and just do it.
Yeah.
So you can do it on a private basis now with people, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, you even look at like hedge funds. I mean, what are they? They're a group of individuals throwing their money together and you know, using risk. I wouldn't be involved in anything that has paper risk to it. I mean, if, like in this situation I said, you know, it's we kind of measure our success or loss in terms of ounces of silver, and based off of that value, not that, you know.
Yeah, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
The future paradigm community is going to be resonating among the members, using money or something like it as a medium to facilitate the interactions between them. What are you doing to create that, to facilitate that? I mean,
the medium of exchange.
Yeah.
We all value silver, so I think that's the easiest place for us to start off. But I really like, after transporting a few thousand ounces through the airport, I'm not going to be carrying my silver you know, to go buy land or something like that. I think that this idea of this non-FDIC bank having a segregated silver storage.
Note. Basically silver notes.
No, and I don't even think we need paper currency. I think that this credit debit system, there's a reason why credit cards are so prevalent. It's because they're so damn easy. I think that we can do a credit card system. And if we're the owners of the system, we obviously can trust it. We can beta test it. We can, we'll have a stake in making sure that it works. I think that that can be let's say we do start this bank idea. We have this card system. We have, a bank, and we are all equitably owning it. Like I would want everybody who put up silver to actually have a stake in the business. We actually use this card service and test it out and, you know, see what works, see what doesn't work, if it's fair, if it's profitable now or not. And that through the denial and maybe halfway through the anger stage, just keep it amongst us. You know, beta test it, make sure it works. See if we have the checks and balances, you know, make sure that we have the right people managing the risk and all that other stuff. We can figure that out so that when the time comes when the smoke's burning out and people are starting to peek their heads up and maybe we have a kick-ass logistics company and trade and we start fulfilling the gaps where, you know, maybe we have fish being farmed in Portland and down in Texas they got beef and we can start trading there. That could be a backform for actually even a commodity banking system and using silver as that clearinghouse.
Yeah, backed by silver makes it real, makes it believable, and gives you and you stand up where everyone else is relying on promises and lies that are bullshit.
Yep, and I think that if we're able to demonstrate a certain amount of comfort amongst ourselves and really do this right, it will be like the Mercedes brand, on the other side where, you know, holy shit, these guys. You know, we're right ahead of time. They did the right thing. They set up the system. It's worked for them. Look how successful they are.
How about this? I know there's very smart people that have traveled this road before us. Mm-hmm. For example, in Virginia, there's attempts to get, you know, legislatively to have silver looked at. There's a committee to look at silver for the state of Virginia.
Yeah.
And I know these other states are ahead of us. There are people who have already gone down this road. Maybe we should get them on.
I had a guy who slipped me a letter.
I mean, we could have a state adopt us.
Here's a guy, the Sound Money Committee of Washington, and he sent me this whole big long letter and stuff like that. And I was nice enough to, you know, say, "Oh, that's great," and I wish you a lot of luck, but. Marvin, working inside the legislature is not of the opposite consciousness.
Suggesting working inside the legislature. I'm saying there are individuals out there.
We have all the individuals we need inside of our group. We have enough problem solvers. We have enough guys who have silver. I don't think that, and I don't want to really attract any more attention than we already have. You know?
I see. A lot of us want to jump in with both feet right now, at least with some of our silver. Let's do it.
Yeah. Well, and again, I guess the next step is to figure out, who wants to do something like this or even entertain like that.
I want to look at the bylaws. I want to look at the rules to make sure that.
Well, actually, here's apparent. Another kind of interesting thing. You know, I know you're a lawyer and Judge Sekola and stuff, but I met a really interesting guy, Damian Larson, who's Rob's attorney down there. And this guy's kind of like a G.I. Joe lawyer. Like,
Is he in Georgia or Florida?
Texas.
Oh, Texas. Okay.
Yeah. And I spoke with him, and he's a really interesting fellow. I've probably only spent, you know, 2 full hours talking to him, but he's certainly grabbed my attention. He's a private attorney, but he's really on this path where, like myself, he made a ton of money in the old paradigm. He, you know, went to school, became an accountant, did all these check boxes, and realized this isn't what it's all about. You know, this what am I working towards is what his big question was. And but he's down there, and I think that whatever we end up doing, I think we'll be lawyered up enough amongst ourselves to.
He could be. Is he a member now?
Yeah, he is.
Good.
So he's newly on board, but yeah, I think that whatever we end up doing, I think everybody will have a good peace of mind. But the thing I like about this is, this is different than saying, you know, buying a bug out location, because a bug out location already entails like a lot of bad stuff's happening, and then everybody starts thinking, well, you know, and this is the other thing, the poison pill, I think, that kind of killed a lot of this too. I said, well, wherever I go, I have 8 other people with me, and these 8 other people are not fully awakened individuals and probably are not going to bring a lot of skills to the table. So then I think everybody was like, well, shit, if we do 30 of us, each of
times
us is
eight.
Times 8, you know, it's like then it's reality.
You
like,
have a collective. You have a collective where the people on top are going to force the people underneath to work as slaves to pay off their indebtedness.
Yeah, so, but the thing I like about this is that it's not, you know, everybody's got to live together and, you know, we're going to be bringing a whole bunch of people. It's essentially we're pledging our, you know, some of our wealth towards a productive thing. And if it works, I think it's going to be huge.
You have a milestone? What are you going to work on to get this bank done?
I'm still thinking about this. Like,
is it a credit union? How about a silverback credit union?
I don't know, but whatever it is, the theme is I want to keep it small amongst ourselves, as little kind of outside attention. I hope it could just be a private LLC, set it up, work out some sort of equitable relationship that, and get this card service, which I think is another couple months away of doing it. Because the first thing I would like to do, just to test it and use it, is to do, you know, this silver card. I would love to have a 1-ounce silver card. You know, with a magnetic stripe, you know, let's put some Silver Shield logo on it, and man, you know, I'd get rid of everything else, and then you start to think like, okay, well, if that works, then do I really need another bank? You know, why? Because I always have a checking account, you know, to pay my mortgage and you know, facilitate all that other stuff. I would like to go all, you know, and have that as my main bank, and really test it and find it may not be super profitable, but I think it's worth working on, and then
it has little value. And it has little value,
yeah.
Unlike everything else,
and even the Lakota thing. I mean, they pay you real silver as interest. So I don't know. I'm fudging along. I know that every time I get into these kind of like funks, you know, I like to throw ideas off of you.
Well, I can tell you that there's, I think, a lot of group members are wanting you to do this, and I've had a discussion with 2 or 3 people saying, why hasn't he started a money system or a bank or whatever, and do it.
Yeah. All right.
I'm kind of concerned that so many members need a skill for the new paradigm, and they have both feet in the old paradigm. They're busy working, you know, 50 hours a week and wanting to leave but can't. And meanwhile, they don't have any skill that they can point to that they could actually use. And they should need to get some they need to get a skill. Mm-hmm. And I'd like to work on the education side. I'd like each individual to do a value analysis of what they have to contribute to the new community and decide what they want to do and start getting. We should be competing to see who's the best one, and you know, to work on, because that's how a real community works.
Yeah.
You know, to have good value. We have to.
So
life
maybe
is serious.
What I'll do is I'll finally. And that was the other thing. I was really hesitant on the survey thing because I think some people, you know, don't want to, you know, show their cards, and I don't blame them. I mean, no one knows how much I have or what I, you know, where my stuff is or whatever I'm doing.
Forget about silver. I'm talking about education.
Yeah, I can form a survey that basically says, hey, you know, number one, if you want to share your information with me, so then there's one guy who's got, you know, a kind of overall see of the kind of superhero status that we all have. But I think, like, if we were to concentrate on what skills they presently have in this paradigm, what are they working towards, you know, are they going to be an ideas guy, are they going to be a labor guy, are they going to be kind of a capital guy, you know, if they're interested in you know, investing in, into something, whether it's small or big or something like that. You know, and then there's other guys who, you know, gee, we just had one of our members, you know, sell or should have sold his computer company. And, you know, he's looking for something to do. You know, how awesome would it be to have him be like the kind of the IT guy to figure out, you know, what the bank needs or something like that, so we can start, you know, putting, you know, putting some, you know, good thinking minds into something that's productive. And I got to think that whatever banking solution we solve is the equivalent of a $1 billion idea for the next paradigm. And so while it may not be a fruitful activity right now, because there's only going to be, you know, maybe 40 or 50 people involved.
Positioning, exactly. Important.
Yep.
Work out the nuts and bolts, the transactional stuff, mm-hmm. to get things, as you said, get the credit card working, et cetera. And that's a very good, you know, getting set up for later on. Get everything working, and so when it's needed, it comes out and can be magnified.
Replicated. And so. I think that the bank idea is, I mean, that's really the nexus of everything. I mean, if you have,
it seems to be in a community. If you look at a small community around America, you go to a small town.
Yep.
There's, I did this when I went to Oneonta, New York. House on the Hill is a lawyer. You know, he owns a big part of the bank. Mm-hmm. Every town seems to be run by the banks.
And it's not that. I mean, it's obviously the storage of wealth, but the idea that, okay, you know, say we want to do aquaponics and biogas and all these things, it takes money. You know, it takes a formation of capital to be able to do that. It needs the system to do that. So regardless of whatever we're going to do after in establishing a community, like even the
we're
example.
We're going to need capital.
That's right. And we're going to need the ability to stroke a check when, you know, who knows what banks are going to be in business and stuff like that.
Yeah, I have my small business friends are been bitterly complaining the last couple of years. There's no money available.
Yeah.
All this free money from the Fed is,
yeah, and you can't get it.
Saved, yeah, by the elite.
And the idea that, you know, in the ultimate exit strategy, I said, okay, you know, there's going to be governments that have a lot of land. I think we'll be able to negotiate, you know, maybe the loyal title or 100-year tax abatements or something like that.
Yeah.
I guess my thought was, okay, we'll just go with a, you know, a whole bunch of silver and plop it out the treasury. But that's not really a realistic thing. But if we have a bank that's set up, maybe we can not even get rid of our silver. We just give them the promise of payment over 30 years. And the bank can do that. So that way we may not even have to depart with our physical silver on that initial purchase. And then before we do that, I think that there's going to be a tremendous amount of wealth needed and traded in logistics during the anger phase. I think that all of us are going to be out of a job. You know, regardless of whatever is going to happen, like the whole paradigm is going to shift, and you know whether the banking system is intact or the consumer or whatever, that's all going to go down. So then, what is going to be needed? You know, basic services and stuff like that, and moving things from one place to another. There's always going to be that huge arbitrage where we have all these groups. So say we have people in, I'm in Ohio, and I have a bunch of guys who have tons of corn.
Credit availability is the key to getting it started.
Exactly. And you know, we have and the trustworthiness of that credit. Like, you know, you could say, oh, I'll sign you a promissory note and you know,
well, silver shuts the conversation down. Here's the silver.
And the bank could actually act as a fiduciary between the transaction and take, you know, a piece of the action where they can say, hey, or an escrow, of an escrow account. Yeah. We'll facilitate the transfer of corn from Ohio to the beef farmer in Texas, and we can act as the intermediary of that. And then, geez, you know, let's throw in our logistics guy, and we actually do the transportation of that. And
let's get experience in that now, as you said. Let's get the thing started and get experience. Can we take the Lakota Bank as a model and diverge from that?
Yeah, I think so, because, I love the Lakota thing, but I'm not going to build anything that I don't own. You know, I'm just not gonna do that.
Is there a transparent explanation of Lakota we can all look at?
Yeah, well, Rob Rob's a member of the bank, so I mean, I'm sure he could. I mean, you can go to their website, but I mean, from what the 50-second thing is that they're basically a glorified depository.
Why not a credit union and start with a credit union and then add silver to it, silver backed.
And again, I'm not the banking guy, and maybe we do or have that in our group, but I like the idea of this non-FDIC thing if that's legit, as little regulatory, little radar on what we're doing.
If we're a private group of closely associated individuals, we don't have to. We're a club.
Yeah, I mean, a club. Like, I kind of like the idea if we could be the equivalent of the private Swiss bank. Like, we don't have.
We can do that.
And essentially,
minimum so many ounces of silver to buy in, and we share. And we're a club, and we all know what we're risking, and we're all friends at it.
And
we eliminate a lot of SEC regulations and so on. Yeah.
Exactly. And say we put in X amount of ounces, but we need an actual bank or something to secure it. I'm pretty sure that the Mulligan Mint can borrow against our silver, monetize it, use those dollars to actually supply cash, and it's not a transaction where it's a taxable event or anything like that, and gives us that ability to do that. So
it's a lot better than leaving it in the ground.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. Like, I think of all these places I got this, hidden and stuff like that. I'm like, it would almost be sexier to have a pretty cool bank to do that. And then, Marvin, kind of take that even further. Who's to say that, we do one down in Texas by these guys, but, maybe we'll do one up in Utah. Maybe we'll do one over in the East Coast or something like that, where we actually have multiple stores, even our members saying, hey, I want to franchise this. I want my own, bank or something like that. And, depending on how people trust the system, maybe clearing out. There's so many opportunities. I don't want to get too ahead of ourselves.
That's a great thought, because you don't really need more than $100,000 to lend $100,000,
mm-hmm.
or more.
Yep.
Necessarily, you don't need $10 million to be helpful to a community.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing, because in most of these transactions it would be fairly quick. So say there was a credit line or this escrow that to facilitate $100,000 in corn being transported down.
Yeah, I was just going to say there's a lot of small business transactions. Thinking about a friend of mine who got screwed by a bank in this way. Mm-hmm. A lot of small business transactions that. Somebody needs, $100,000 for a week,
mm-hmm.
to make something happen, mm-hmm. to consummate a transaction.
Yeah.
And just for a week.
Yeah.
And no one and it doesn't happen because the money's not available. So it doesn't have to be long term. It frequently is not. Just a short term guarantee.
And the other thing is, I think we can do this without usury. So the example that you just gave, we could be essentially a partner in on facilitating the deal, whether it's a, X amount of percentage of
member. It could be a member service. You get three transactions a year.
Okay.
For free if you're a member. I mean, we can make whatever rules we want, whatever was logical.
All right. I feel like we're on the cusp of something huge. And it's no secret that I'm a firm believer, the more that you're able to walk this kind of intellectually honest path, and that you meet the right people and the right things happen all at the same time. I just feel like more than any other time that I've been doing this, that something big is about to break. And I think this could be it, because it's this is a first tangible step into doing something for the next paradigm, as opposed to theory, as opposed to awakening, as opposed to consciousness. This is an active.
As an observer, I'll just comment. You started out by, without really thinking too much, I guess, mm-hmm. buying a bunch of silver a long time ago, watching it appreciate, and now raising everyone's awareness of what's going on, and then doing this big time. And now your next thing, your last thing has been to create your own coin,
mm-hmm.
And that's been very successful. Now, well, the next step is be a bank.
Yeah, and the thing I like about even the coin thing is because that's still a consciousness thing. That is a tangible thing. So that I think that's another thing.
It's an advertisement.
Really, yeah, it's a good advertisement. you know, I actually got it into Eric Sprott's hand, which is pretty cool because now I'm a little bit more up on his radar. But, yeah, I mean, you know, having these coins and the ability to do that, I mean, we essentially be able to create our own form of barter and have kind of a brand name currency that people can trust and get that
I
out
like
there.
I like the franchise aspect of this where work out the nuts and bolts for a bank in perhaps Texas, and then some of us on the East Coast can get together and like, we should be doing this instead of, you know, putting our silver together and creating little banks, perhaps, instead of thinking so much about bug out.
Yeah, yeah.
But something we do locally with our neighbors, perhaps, which is what we're finding out.
And I think one of the things with the bug out, I think the idea is that we'd be able to trade skills and stuff like that. But the reality is, as long as we still have the ability of monetizing and spending with security, that's really what we're looking to do. Like, it is to be able to be able, because think about when the dollar collapse happens, there's massive counterparty risk that no one will be able to trust anybody else.
Right.
And that all of human interaction right now is really based off of dollars being traded for labor or ideas or stuff like that. And if we're able to go essentially mountaintop to mountaintop saying, okay, the dollar's done, but we have a payment service that can, that work yeah. right away.
Right.
You know,
that's one hell of an idea, yeah.
You know, like, do we really need to be in each other's backyard and doing stuff? We can maintain our ability to be with our friends and family, not have to uproot our family, do all that other stuff. And then the other kind of cool thing is, well, then if the bank does become successful and profitable and do things, maybe that would be the first enabler for a lot of us to just, you know, leave what we're doing now and, you know, work on... promoting
yes.
the bank or
can you sketch out basic principles right now? I mean, one, no FDIC.
Mm-hmm.
Two, everything secured by silver. How about other precious metals? Platinum?
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why we wouldn't be able to. The only hiccup, and again, this is more Rob and Damien thing, the liquidity of the silver because of the mint.
Using the mint. I see.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a key component. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thanks for pointing that out.
But
another thing would be credit card checks.
Yeah, and I know Rob's been all over that. So
membership buy-in. I would just point out transparency is extremely important.
Yeah. Like, I would.
It's going to be psychopaths popping up otherwise.
Exactly. And some sort of. And I touched on this before in the societal operating system when we talked. I would really like to see a private, I don't want to say corporate, but a private governance amongst ourselves that
yes.
Would more or less represent what the Constitution was. Because I'm a big believer that I think democracy is one of the main reasons why we're in this massive problem right now.
Yes.
But if everybody is an equitable member of this and then we have some sort of governance that maintains
protects the individual from the
from the collective
from the problem.
So I'd like to see like a constitutional yeah. republic merged with a corporate structure where we may have the CEO be the quote unquote president. But it's balanced by the Congress, who has the control of the purse strings, and then the senator, and maybe
maximize personal action. Provide the most freedom to the individual by taking away the power of the group. Basically,
yes. I mean,
the way it worked is you prevented the government from having too much power.
Mm-hmm.
Privately created, instigated, and consummated contracts
mm-hmm.
is where it's all at. That's secret of the Roman Empire, for that matter, where private law started.
Mm-hmm.
The government exists to support the private contracts, not the other way around.
Yeah.
Yeah, not,
and yeah. Really, that's the ultimate role. So, I've been kind of getting off base.
So, the rules of your bank would reflect that principle.
Yes. And that's why I think that even in
that's
our,
another theme.
There's my dog going.
That's like the fourth or fifth theme here. Yep. Yeah.
The
a private bank could be a natural evolution of the SSR, and that would be good from a legal viewpoint where you have a private group. It's not a public subscription. If you have a public subscription, you get in deep trouble, as you know.
Yeah.
The fact that the SSR is closed is a big deal. It would be very helpful here.
Yeah, and again, it's like all these things have been – like I haven't like purposely set out to do this. Like, you know, even with the bank, like when I closed down the SSR, that's like you know, I didn't maybe feel that the time was right or maybe understood the opportunity. I mean, this kind of non-FDIC bank idea is to me when Rob was telling me about that, I mean, he talked with some of the biggest Texas lawyers down there, and they, you know, he was honest with them. He said, you know, if I want to start a bank, what do I need? And they're like, well, you need $10 million, and you need $800,000 just for the programs and computers and all that other stuff. And he goes, well, what if I don't want to be FDIC insured? And they're like, well, why would you want to do that? And he said, don't worry about it. Let me figure that out. And then Rob specifically asked, "Is there anything illegal about that?" And they said, "No."
So, a private finance club.
Yeah.
Basically, if everything's transparent and people understand the risk, those are the two themes that the law has a lot of rules to cover when you step outside those boundaries.
And the crazy thing, Marvin, is like, if we didn't live in this paradigm, this wouldn't be such a radical idea. It'd be like, duh. But it's like
150 years ago.
Can't we do this? You know.
Yeah.
All right. So I feel a little bit clearer. What I'll do is I'll try to get Rob and maybe get Damien on the phone and try to figure out, like, is this something worth doing? In the meantime, I'm gonna set up a survey where people can either say, yeah, I want to share my information with the group, or just share it with Chris. I'm interested in investing in something like this. I have skills. I have this, and I think that could be something worth pursuing. And
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I think we run into trouble when we talk about our own silver or money. If we could keep that out of the questionnaire, that might be helpful. They could basically, yes, I'm interested in investing.
Yeah, exactly. I don't
a lot,
even know.
You say a lot or a little. Leave it at that, and then education skills. What skills do you have for our, like, we have like already a list of, you know, wealth producing areas for the community. Which of those areas are you ready to work in? Which area would you like a mentor for an apprentice? And which area do you want to learn from a master? That's what I see.
Okay. And it's funny because my skill set range from philosopher to a homeless killer, which is what the Marines taught me. So I can go from one extreme to the other, but I lack a lot of technical skills like building and energy and stuff like that. So I'll leave that to people who have more of a resonating energy with that. All right, Marvin, I want to thank you for being on this call. I really enjoy talking with you and kind of sorting things out, because you're a good logical thinker to bat ideas around. And anytime I kind of get in these, like,
hey, thanks. We're all looking. We've been waiting for this bank, you know.
Yeah,
we have been.
Yeah, I think it would be easier if there wasn't so much uncertainty about what's going forward. Like, if everything blew up and, you know, we saw that, all the factors out there that came to be when the opportunity presented itself, it'd be easier in moving forward to do something. And I guess that was my premise going into this, you know, remain decentralized, wait for the fires to burn out, and then we can get together to do something. But I really like this idea that we can start with a small group.
Work it out.
Work this part out. Like, really focus on the monetary aspect of this, because that's going to essentially facilitate everything else that we could be doing in the future.
you need a roundtable discussion where you get this Texas guy, Damien, and two or three other people around a table.
We also have
like a 3-hour discussion on it. Let's tack it. Let's have a wide.
Okay.
People who are real experts on it.
Okay. Yeah. And listen, I know that there's a lot of other guys out there who are still like figuring me out and stuff like that. So, we don't know what superpowers are out there. And I think that's one of the exciting things that we have going forward. Cause it's like every day, you know, I learn, you know, this guy does that. And I'm like, wow, that is really cool. And I could see where that could fit in. I'm excited. I appreciate you coming onto the call and kind of sorting this through. And, you know, I think something really cool is going to come of this. So
I'm waiting to see your panel discussion or something equivalent as soon as possible.
Yeah. No, I'm gonna get on it today. I mean, I just got done recapping. This whole past week was kind of a whirlwind, and you know, who knows? God willing, something really good is going to come out of this, one way or the other. It's wherever I'm going in this path, we are definitely going in the right direction because there's just too many good things that are coming together and stuff that. If this isn't it, then we'll figure out what it is.
Yes.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right.
Good talking to you. Take care. Bye.